Welcome to the ETOP Podcast with your host, Richard Walsh. I'm a 30-year business-owning veteran, creator of the ETOP Academy, and best-selling author of Escape the Owner Prison, the contract's new way to scale, regain control, and fast-track growth while loving life. My mission? To help 10,000 business owners create the freedom in their lives to do what they want, when they want, and still be massively successful. Now, let's hit our topic for the day.
All right, here we are on the ETOP Podcast with my guest today, Terry Begg. Terry is the author of Attract and Keep Customers for Life, Four Abilities to Build Trust, Communicate Your Value, and Charge What You're Worth. Okay, now that's a power-packed subtitle there, and I love it because this is what we talk about at ETOP all the time, right? This is how to build a business. Terry has, he's going to tell you, years and years and years. I think he's had 40 years in business, okay? And he's going to talk about this and the lessons he's learned. We're going to discuss this stuff. This is going to be a great conversation. So no further ado, Terry, come on board. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, Richard, how are you?
I am outstanding. I am just looking forward to this conversation. It's going to be great.
Yeah, sure will. It sounds like we're both on the same page. And I'm excited as well.
Good stuff. Well, Terry, as I do with all my guests, give us a little backstory. Kind of, I know you've been in this at a long time. Kind of bring us up to speed real quick. And we'll kind of get into the gist of your book here and talk about this.
Okay. Just to give you the Reader's Digest version of what happened with me is when I was in high school, I realized I couldn't keep a job, but I never got fired, but I just couldn't do it. And what it took me the longest time to realize is I at first thought there was something wrong with me, but I just was a dyed in the wool entrepreneur. I couldn't work for anyone else. I went in and out of jobs, but by the time I was 18, that was through high school. When I graduated, I knew exactly what I wanted to do. And that was to own a painting business because I had painted summers a little bit with my brother, in the earlier years. And what I found out real quickly was if you don't have customers, you don't have a business. And I really, really struggled. Didn't let that stop me. And I got married when I was young. I was 21. My wife was just 19. And I promised her a good life. And within 6 months, I was rolling pennies just to pay for advertising to try and get enough business to just pay our rent for our tiny little apartment. And it went like that for a long time until I was maybe, I want to say 27, 28 years old. And everything changed for me when my wife said three little words to me. And they weren't, I love you. They were, Terry, I'm pregnant. And I can't explain it, but it's like it flipped a switch in my brain. I realized this is not going to work unless I focus on my customers. And I started treating them like friends, good friends, instead of like the enemy, like somebody's got to win in this confrontation. Either you hire me and I win, or you don't hire me and you win. And I looked at it that way. But as I got older, I started to understand they were the very pathway to my success. And so I started focusing on the people skills part, and I quit trying to become a better painter because I was always trying to prove myself in the early years that I was worthy of painting someone's house. But what I realized is it'll speed your success so much faster if you could just focus on how you communicate and build trust with your customers. And my business turned around within 6 months. I doubled my income. And in the next painting season, not even in a year, I doubled it again. And everything changed for me. Business started becoming so easy that I couldn't keep up with all the work I had. And I had to hire a crew. And then it got even busier and just things went crazy. And to this day now, it's been 43 years since I started that business. And now I haven't advertised since 2012. And I still get so much business. I could run two or three crews. But I don't, but it's a whole different relationship with my customers. But it was that process of learning that you need your customers and you need to know how to communicate your value to them without bragging or sounding like you're selling. And that's what I created a book about. I realized there's other people that probably had the same struggles that I've had. And so I created this book to help business owners who are struggling with making themselves known and being able to charge top dollar for their service. And that's where I'm at right now.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, it's very good points there. I think oftentimes, like you said in the beginning, when you were struggling with, you know, it's a win or lose situation, right? And I get that because I was there 30 some years ago, same thing, you know. In a sense, I like people and I love my customers. And I was like, yeah, I want to deliver the absolute best product I could, right? I didn't want anyone to be able to equal what I did. you know, and a lot of times what happens, and you can probably attest to this, you know, like you said, you can get better painting, and as you get really, really good, the improvements are in very, very minute degrees, right? Mm-hmm. Which means they're imperceptible to your average customer.
Yep,
right. Absolutely. They're not going to know the difference. Right, Terry. So then all of a sudden you're like, well, what's the point? I mean, it's good to be great, but you got to grow a business.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I'm so glad that, you know, and I know kids are a great motivator. I have six. They motivate me every day to keep going and make things happen. But to have that real motivation, that they had that light bulb that went off for you is really, really awesome. You know, when you stop trying to be the technician, this is what ETOP's all about. Stop trying to be the technician and let's build a business. Because let me know if you agree. I mean, not anyone can paint. Painting is actually, I've done a lot of it. It's difficult. Okay. It can be fatiguing, but there's also technique like in anything. And, you know, there's good painters and there's bad painters, mm-hmm. you know, but you could also hire and train good painters, right?
Exactly. It's not that hard. It's just a process of doing it over and over and giving your guys a little bit of time, but they figure it out pretty quickly.
Yeah, that's great. And so what that did is give you a chance to work on the business, right? So you said you started focusing on the people. So let's talk about that a little bit. You know, when you started, what I know that kind of came to you to do, but what was kind of the process that you started to go through when you said, well, I need to focus on the people. So kind of break it down for us. Let us know what that actually means.
Oh, that's perfect. An easy question to answer, Richard. Thank you. What I learned is, and without realizing it, because it was a process that took years and years and years, but now I look back and I see it really broke down to just three stages: the before the sale stage, the during the sale stage, and the after the sale stage. And when you do it right, it doesn't even feel like selling. Really, it's more about just communicating with your customers. But that first piece is when so many times people in our industry, as you probably know, you know, you're trying to prove yourself, especially when you're fairly new, but they wouldn't have called you in the first place if they didn't think you already had the skills to handle the job. And so many people try to prove themselves when really all they got to do is focus on making the connection with the customer. So the first thing I do is what I call the connectability phase, or the before the sale phase. And the main thing is get them started talking, and then let them talk, let them explain to you what it is that they need help with, because that's really, you're just there to help fix their problem. And if you don't listen to them, you'll never really know what the problem is. And if you can keep them talking long enough, you can actually, they'll give you a little hints of exactly what it's going to take to get their business. And even at your price, sometimes you might have to start low a little bit to get established some, but if you can communicate your value and help them to feel like they really matter to you, that you care about them more than the competition, they'll hire you. And it gets easier and easier after that.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, it's, and I think too many people from a sales standpoint too are there for the commission, right? They're there for the close, mm-hmm. you know, and they get this mixed up. You know, like you said, you're there to solve a problem. Every sale is a problem solving application,
yep.
right? That's what you have to do. Someone, they're there, whether they're buying a car or need, you know, the bedroom painted, whatever it is. You know, they have an issue that needs to be taken care of, and that's why I've called you. And I like the point that you say that they've already contacted you, so they get you have the skill. Okay, you don't have to go there and beat your chest, talk smack about other painters just to show how good you are, right? Because that some people tend to do that, right? Which is a really horrible way of doing business. But
it's all about them in the beginning. They don't want to know about you anyways, you know, and hate to anybody out there that thinks that, I don't mean to hurt your feelings, but it's really all about them. That's why you're there.
Right. It's the old saying, they don't care how much you know till they know how much you care.
Exactly.
Right. You got to dial into the customer. You got to, I use this in my ebook. I actually use a painting example of, you know, two different contractors, you know, talking about building value, building price and everything else, you know, and it's kind of interesting. It's just like we were talking about. One guy comes in and he's, you know, walking up and there's trash falling out of his van and he's flicking a cigarette in the bushes and he never takes his shoes off. He walks in the house and he's, how about 700? You know, he gives him a price, you know, just off the cuff, you know, he doesn't ask them what they're really looking for about trim or anything else. And then the next guy comes is all dialed in. He's a pro, got the car, wears the shoe boots, does the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Walks through, asks all this stuff, goes through, prints up the perfect guesstimate right out of the vehicle. You know what I mean? Gives it to him and it's $1,500. And they go with him every time.
Yeah.
Right? He gets double the money, it's done. You know, he knows everyone's happy, right? So very, very similar to what you're talking about. So people need to understand that, just like you're saying, you got to put the focus on your customers, right? Did you find that – challenging in the beginning? Was that, I know you can learn this and get better at this, but what was the biggest hurdle in that as you started going that first year, two, 3 years?
The biggest hurdle I think I went through is I'd look, even though I was 18, which is already probably too young to own a business, most people would think, I looked like I was 14. So my biggest hurdle was getting past that. But what I realized is I was creating a lot of that in my own head. You know, I'd show up with an older truck and try to pretend like I really knew what I was doing. But I was afraid the first thing they were thinking is this guy's just too young. There's no way. One of the first bids I ever gave, I showed up at the door and the guy looked at me and he just said to me, now, if I hire you to do the painting, who's going to show up, you or your dad? And I thought, oh, no. And that hurt. That affected me. It took me years to get past that. But if you can go there and listen to what their problem is and not worry about proving yourself right off, I used to spin it and just say, once I figured out what it is they really want, if I saw them looking at that old beat up pickup truck I had with the skinny little pipes for ladder racks and the secondhand equipment, if I saw them looking at that, instead of looking at it as a negative, I would just say something like, I realize this isn't the nicest equipment you're ever going to see, but it's paid for and my overhead is low. And that's why my prices are so much more affordable, but I know what I'm doing and I'll do everything I can to, you know, just bust my butt for you. And I'll do you the best job humanly possible. And it stopped being a problem after that. But the biggest trouble, my biggest hurdle was getting it out of my head that I wasn't worthy of the price I wanted to make.
You know, that's a good point. Cause I'll tell you what, when you look at the people who have been shafted by a contractor, it's not from the guys with the bad trucks. It's the guys with the high-end trucks. Okay. So, you know, who got the show going, but they don't have the integrity. They don't have the attention to detail in the job and everything else. You know, they got kind of an exterior show going on. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so yeah, but I like your point that you have to get that internal confidence that it's about the quality. My truck isn't going on your walls. Okay. My paint and my expertise is going on your walls, you know, regardless of what I'm driving, you know, and that is a hurdle for people. I started with a wheelbarrow and a shovel. Okay. In the back of my Jeep Wrangler. Mm-hmm. All right. And I'm there with shovels and I'm digging holes and I'm building stuff and I'm doing fake rock and concrete and I'm mixing stuff. And I started just building, you know, I got someone to trust me, did it, took some great pictures of it, showed the work. Next thing you know, a year goes by, 5 years goes by, 10. I have a portfolio unsurpassed, mm-hmm. right? So people look at that and that's all I have to do is put that out. And there's my work. And like, oh, you know, regardless of what I'm driving, I was able to drive better things. But in the beginning, I had a 79 F-150. Okay. So driving rust out over the back, you know, in the very beginning, you know, so, you know, that's what I stepped up to, you know, from the Jeep and stuff. But, you know, it's just, you do what you got to do if you're into doing the job, right? You're into being an entrepreneur. You can't think that you'll be better when you get better stuff,
yep.
right? Yep. Right? Because you never will. Especially because that's not – go ahead.
Especially if it's a service business, right? Because it's all about what you do, not what you say.
Right, right. Yeah, it's just important. Again, I think it's great that you want to move up to that level because that's where you should be. Mm-hmm. Right. When you get good. But like you said, people have to understand, I think the biggest thing, Terry, today, and maybe you see this because I'm sure you've got, you know, employees of all ages. A lot of these younger kids coming up and working, especially if they're in the trades, and maybe they do have some entrepreneurial, you know, seeds in them and they're starting to sprout a little bit, but they don't want to go through that process. They don't want to get the bad truck, you know, because that's what they need. Yet you don't understand that, like, a truck that can carry six ladders and materials in the back is, no matter what it looks like, is worth a lot, okay, yeah. to your business, because you're not going to do it in a Kia, okay? Yeah. So it's not going to work. So do you find that sometimes you see that out there, like people aren't willing to make that initial sacrifice for their yeah. business?
Yes, and the younger, and things have changed over the years more. What I'm seeing a lot, because we've had such a demand, I've tried to hire more people so we can turn jobs over really fast. And we do. Our average outside home, we can paint in one day, but it takes four or five people. But what I'm finding is a lot of these guys going through the interview process, who lasts and who doesn't. And I'm seeing there's a lot of them. They grew up in front of a computer in an air conditioned room. And those guys usually don't last very long as soon as they get out in that hot sun and they get into that production environment. So it's been a learning process for me, but I'm seeing that is changing a lot. But there are still people out there that love to work with their hands and they want to get out there and get sweaty. And it's been a learning experience for me as well. But those are the ones that seem to last. And there's still a lot of entrepreneurs out there. It's just there should be more in the service industry. But because of that, there's a lot of opportunity there now.
Yeah, that's a good point. So and let's talk about this a little bit on your interview process, because now you've had the good, you had the bad, you've had the keyboard warrior, and you've had the paintbrush warrior, right? There's two different, very different people there, you know. So now do you spend a little more time in your interview process, really finding out real work experience, real experience? I mean, you know, because whether they're, you know, 19 or they're, you know, 29 or whatever the ages might be, what are you kind of looking for as you go through that process?
Well, like I mentioned, I'm looking for people who want to be outside and work with their hands, but I found it's easier to hire people rather than asking them to meet me at my office or at a restaurant and having coffee. I bring them right to the job and I get out a masking machine. I said, if I hire you, this is what you'll be using. And I take them to a window on the house and I mask it off. Cause like I said, we have a niche where we spray aluminum and cedar sided homes. Mostly because I have so much business. I just focus on what we make our best money at. And I'll take them out there and I said, this is what you'll be doing. And then I get drop cloths out and they don't even touch a paintbrush for a very long time. So the skill level is not that high, but there's an opportunity for them to go there. But I found the ones that see exactly what I do, if they're really shaky, just walking up an extension ladder a little ways, I know they may work out, but that's going to be a challenging thing to have to deal with as well when they first start. So I bring them to the job. I show them exactly what they'd be doing. And I ask them questions like, what do you consider a bad enough, a reason why you wouldn't need, you couldn't come to work that day? You know, and I just wait and they look at me kind of funny, but I mean, do you have to be sick or really sick or just a sore throat? Or you have dependable transportation? Can you be there every day and starting at 8 o'clock? Certain questions that I asked. And even then they'll say yes on some of those, but they don't always work out. But I found that does put the ball in my court that they're going to last a little longer if they know exactly what they're going to do and exactly what the expectation is.
Yeah, that's good. You know, I like meeting them on the job site. That's really important. You know, you get to see a lot from that. You see how they approach the job, right? I mean, literally from the curb, right? They get out of their car. Where are they walking? Straight across the grass? Are they using the sidewalk? Are they asking someone before they see you, trying to find you? You know, you can determine an awful lot from the time they open that door,
yeah,
right? And come out. I mean, you can, if you got the eye for that kind of stuff, that's really good. It's very, very, that's a unique interviewing process. You know, I like that. Like you said, test them on that ladder. Cause believe me, I've been on some tall ladders. Okay. And you haven't done it. Okay. You can, you know, usually you can get comfortable with it, but if you haven't done it, you probably have to explain to them, like, there's going to be a little learning curve here, you know, a little acclimation process, right, of getting up there if you're not used to it. But I like that you start them out. You're going to mask, you're going to do, because they're going to do basically the grunt work, right?
Exactly. Unload the van, load it back up, get the ladders down off the top. And what time they get there too, that they're, you know, not just if it's an 8 o'clock meeting, they show up at 8, you want them to see them there, you know, a little bit before that. And I think that speaks to the character a lot of, you know, you can always make excuses why you're late, but it's just an excuse, especially in that early stage.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, it really is. I mean, you could probably spend a chapter in your book on this. You know, you could talk about this stuff because it's about character.
Yep.
Right. What you're really discovering there is character, right?
Yeah. In a service business, it's not, you know, you can judge the quality of a product real easily. You know, it's observable, but how do you judge quality in a service? And what you just said, it's character and integrity. And there are little signs of that you can see right from the get-go. And those are the things I try to show my customer. I'm never late for a bid. I'm usually 5 minutes early. And same way when you're hiring people, you want to look for those same things. They say hire for attitude, not skill, because you can train them. But if they don't have the right attitude from the get-go, it may not, there's a better chance that it won't work out.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really important. So let me ask you on that aspect of, you know, how are you training that within the job? Okay. So they get the job, you know, they look good. They're going to get there. So how do you convey that to your customers? You know, what is this, just because they see how the job operates? Because what I did, I would get compliments from the homeowners all the time on how well the crew worked. They were just astounded. You know, they could sit and watch them all day. It was amazing. You know, so how do you, are you training that within the team, you know, and let them know that this is part of your job? Is remember, there's eyes on you all the time. And you go, not me, but the homeowner. Okay. And there's how you're going to get to keep working. Because if they're not happy, then they're not going to refer. Like you said, you haven't had to do ads since 2012. Okay. You're not going to get that referral business, and that could be disastrous.
Yep. It can make or break you, but life is so easy when you can get your business to the point where it's just 100% repeat and referral, because that is, as you know, the best business in any business, right? And once my business got to that point, everything changed for me. I mean, it got easier to get work and I got more booked up. And the thing is, when customers, and I'm sure you saw this too, when they know you're busy, they want you even more. Isn't it funny how that works out?
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's, you know, people want to be with, you know, what's the old, I forget the guy right now, but Yogi Berra said, no one goes to that restaurant anymore. It's too busy. You know, it's one of those things. You know, so it's hilarious. But you get that. People want to be with winners. Yeah. Okay. You're a winner. You're busy all the time. You want to build those raving fans. I talk about that in my book. I talk about it in my ebook as well. Same thing like you're talking about. You want to build raving fans, right? Yeah. You want that customer when they're at a dinner or they're out somewhere and someone, the word painting comes up, they have to interject that they got to have you.
Yeah.
They got to have Terry, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a sale. And they just sold for you, right?
I mean, there's not a day out of the week, I don't think, in the summertime during a regular season where people don't call me up. And right away, they know I'm busy now over the years. It's gone on like that for so long. But when people say to me, and I believe it or not, I hear this a lot. I know you're busy. I don't know what it's going to cost, but just put me on your list because I don't know when you can get out here to look at my job. And I'll always joke with them. I'll say, I haven't even given you a price yet. What if it's ridiculous? And they always say, oh, I trust you. I know how you are and everything. But there's no better feeling when they say, put me on your list. Put me on your list before I even get out there to give them a price. That speaks volumes. And they know I'm not going to take advantage of them either. Although I have steadily raised my prices and as I've gotten busier. But that's natural and that's normal. And people will pay your price if you can communicate the value.
Yeah, that's a really good. I mean, that's music to a contractor's ears.
Yeah.
Just please put me on the list. Yeah. Now, I used to use it on the flip side too, Terry. I'd get customers who I know are going to be nothing but trouble just from the initial phone call. So they go on the 2-year wait list. Okay. Well, you know, we're really booked up. We'll give you about 2 years. Forget if you can wait, I'd be happy to put anything else. No, I really need this now. Okay. I'm sorry. So I've done that, you know. Then you can also, of course, price yourself out and things like that too. But you know, there's always that instance. But there is no sweeter sound than someone saying just what you said. Just put me on the list. We'll talk details later. Just can you schedule me in? Because then the other thing too, it's like training your customers, right? Mm-hmm. You're like training people to know. Well, you better talk to this guy now because he's going to be months out. So if you need something like tomorrow, he's not going to be able to help you. But if you're really serious about getting it done right, you better call Terry now.
And that is
set time.
And that is something they say is I've already talked to so-and-so, or I live right next door to the job we just saw you do. And we know we found out you're really busy and we got to get on your schedule quick. And this last summer, and because of the pandemic, I'm fortunate there's so many horrible, you know, stories that you hear from it, but people in the service industry have been busier than ever because people have to stay home and they aren't spending money on vacations and they have, you know, the stimulus money and they're putting it into their homes. And I know for me, I got so busy. I was 40 plus houses booked ahead all summer long and I've never been that busy before, but it looks like it's rolling that way again. It's still going to stay that way at least for another year. And I hope it continues on for as long as I do this, but it does have a way of just creating its own momentum in time. And like you said, there's just no better words than saying, put me on your list before you've even come out to give the bid.
Yeah, that's good stuff. Let me go back to one thing you had mentioned, because you kind of niched your painting business. You're doing the cedar and you're doing the aluminum, the spray and everything else. So, I really like that approach, right? I think it's a good lesson for people to learn that we talked about before we got on about, you don't want the super wide net. I paint everything. I'll do your dining room table. I'll do the windows. I'll paint your chimney. I'll put whatever you got, the basement, I'll paint it all. You know, so you got to be careful with that approach. A lot of guys, when they're new, have that, that's that smell of desperation, anything to make money, because I'm trying to make money. But if they really can understand, that's why they got to take your wisdom right now, right? 40 plus years in this, and understand that if you niche from the get-go, you know, you're going to, first, you're going to be profitable a lot sooner. Okay. And then the word, you're going to build real fans because you have a unique thing. So you're going to minimize your competition because you can be an expert in the specific niche, right?
Yeah, exactly. I found anymore, maybe 15, 20% of my work comes from other painters, which is insane, I think, because I've discovered that most people don't want to do what I do because it takes a crew. A lot of guys are just a one or a two man operation. And I'm starting to hear from customers that said, yeah, I called so-and-so painting and they said to just call you. And I told them I had aluminum siding. So that niche, you know, when you specialize, it changes everything. Again, you can raise your prices if you're a specialist. Look at every other industry, like specialists as doctors and lawyers, and everybody specializes now. Jack of all trades does not communicate the same value as a specialist does. So everybody trusts experts. So position yourself as an expert in just one or two certain things that you make your best money at and are easiest to do. We never have any touch-ups. So that's our focus, because life's just so much easier when we're doing those types of siding.
Well, it's also, think about this. There's two things to this. First, for your guys, for your crew, they mm-hmm. know what they're going to every day. Can you imagine not knowing what they're going to do each day? Like one day it's, we're just going to do trim here. We're going to do this here. I mean, that's like, that's that there's a stress aspect in that. Right. Plus yeah. they're also not going to hone their skill, right? You're given an opportunity to hone a skill in that specialty. And again, it elevates your business, right? Because now you got greats working for you, right? Mm-hmm. People who are really exceptional at what they do. And believe me, it impresses the customer.
Oh, yeah.
Specialization impresses the customer when you do it right.
Exactly. It's like nothing else. I always tell my guys, and we work as a team too, that's something else I probably should have mentioned. When I'm meeting someone in the beginning, I say, you're going to be part of the team. You're not going to go way over here and work. We all stay on one side of the house and we all prep it together. And then the sprayer starts to follow behind, and it's just a regular process that just blows the owners away because they see the masking crew ahead and the sprayer coming right behind them. And then after the mask crews finish the fourth side, they start tearing off. So they start following the sprayer, and the whole process of it is just, they're just blown away by it. They've seen nothing like it. And the only time we fail in terms of our having our system stay smooth and easy throughout every day is if I get away from that little niche of mask and spray, and that works best on just certain types of homes. But like you said, the crew knows what to expect every day. They all specialize in one or two different things, because one guy, he just caulks around the windows and sprays. One guy usually just puts down the drop cloths, and then the guys that are comfortable on ladders, they mask the high windows. So everybody gets good at everything. When I pull into a driveway, I can tell how long it's going to take us to do the house within maybe 15 or 20 minutes before I even get out and talk to the customers. So that way I don't give an estimate. I give them an exact price. And that another thing that sets me apart from the competition is I don't give estimates.
So, well, explain that, because I like what you're saying. So explain that you don't give estimates. Explain exactly what that means.
What I mean is when I come and I give them a price and I hand them my job proposal, and it's good if you, like you said earlier, if you could do it right there on the spot, because everyone else is saying, okay, I'll get back to you in a few days or I'll follow up with you whenever. I write it out right there and I hand it to them and I say, just so you know, this isn't an estimate, it's a price. And they look at me and they go, what do you mean sometimes? And I go, this is what you'll pay unless you add more work on after we've started. This will be the price. I know my business and I give firm prices. And it's just another thing that sets you apart. And people will look at that and see it. And even though they've gotten other prices that were less money than yours, a lot of times they'll accept your bid because they know going in what the damage is. And it makes you look so much more professional. And that's just another advantage of specializing in what you do best.
Exactly. You know, we are kindred spirits, Terry. That's what I did. This is the price. unless I uncover something, there's a giant 4-foot stump, you know, 10 inches on the ground when I'm digging a hole, you're going to have to, you know, you're going to have that extracted. But other than that, this is the done price.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to come back and say, oh, by the way, like a lot of guys do, they go with that low bid mentality, then try to jack it up when they're in there. Mm-hmm. And that is the best way to get irritated customers who will never refer you. You know, when you can say, this is it, it's turnkey, I'm finished. You know, again, unless you come out and say, can you do something else? That's just ideal. And I think people should take this to heart and understand this process that you need to perfect your air quote, an estimating process. Just like you said, you want to be speed. You want speed with your estimating process. Do not, I've shared this before. I have gone to given a proposal on a job for a roofing job, close the deal there. Okay. So an hour and a half of the people talking, close the deal. We're walking out. They get their mail out. Literally, here's an estimate from another roofer that came from 2 weeks previous. Mm-hmm. Right. And she's like, well, I guess I don't need this. And I go, she goes, it's from another roofer. I go, well, you know, snooze, you lose. I mean, you can't take 2 weeks to, all that you're saying is you don't know what you're doing. Yeah. Okay. Or you don't care.
Yep.
You
are so point on. My gosh, Richard, I wrote a note down here while you were talking that I got to find out about your book because we are exactly on the same page. I've never given a podcast with someone and been a guest where I'm talking to the person who's exactly on the same page with me as you are. And
it's good stuff. I mean, Terry, this is what people know. When I had a big business guy. Anyways, he does stuff all over the country. And he read my book and he said, you know what this is, your book? He goes, this is what every business should do, but doesn't. Mm-hmm. Okay. That's what my book is. This is everything people should do, just like you. We could put our books side by side and maybe be very similar, you know, but it's really understanding the basics, Terry. Yeah. You know, I think people have gotten away from some very basic elements of business principles, right? They throw them away thinking they're going to be something different and unique when you don't need to be that in the business aspect. Like, yeah, you can have your niche and everything else. But I think what we're seeing here is, you know, this is where it's at. There's all these simple principles. If you can do the basics, if you can't cover the basics, right? Like if you can't shoot a free throw, you know, what are you going to do the rest of the time? So you got to basically kind of really understand your foundational business, you know, and hold to all those principles so everyone on the team can understand that. And it comes through to every single customer, you know, then you fine tune it as you go, right?
Yeah. You know, you're not going to be a perfect fit for everyone, but that's okay. Everyone is not your customer anyways. And by specializing that's probably the key thing. But like you had said, there's just really a handful of minimum requirements that you got to be good at, and they're not hard, but the challenge is doing it consistently day after day, every time, and becoming known for that. And I talk in my book about, I think there's threshold requirements that you got to have in there. See if I can remember them. One, if you tell someone you're going to be there at a certain time, be there. Two, if you make a mess, clean it up. And three, oh, that's the one I can't think of. Actually, there's four of them. If somebody calls you, call them back immediately, the same day for sure. Some people even return calls within an hour or two, but have a certain time of the day you always call people back. And people assume I can get to their house right away on the painting because I give them a bid the same day when they've been already waiting for a week or two, just like what you said. But those couple of little things shows your customer that you know what you're doing and you care about them because you're trying to make their life easy as well.
You made a very important point there on the return of the call, right? I had kind of the 90-second rule, like if someone called and left a message. So I really was into like returning people's calls. I'm like you, like, you know, set an appointment. Okay. Cause they're never more interested than when your phone's ringing. That's when those people are the most interested in what you got. You're right. So you want to, you know, I ended up getting a virtual assistant to be a call center. Right. Just have someone else pick it up, set my appointments and everything else for my leads, follow up on my leads. That was a big plus for my business, for scaling my business, because I couldn't keep up with the phone calls. I'd get leads in, I had to make the calls. And after a month or two of that, all of a sudden you're making 75 calls a day just to get more work, right, on paid leads and things. So I outsourced all that, changed the whole game. You know, all of a sudden my investment, less than $2,500 a month in paid leads, turned in over $100,000 in work every month because I hired a VA to handle it. And they said it was amazing. But you're right. It's the rapidness. It's showing you care. right? That you're important to me. You know, I'm not going to take a day or 2 days or 3 days to get back to you. People do it all the time. I see it when I coach business. So I'm like, you have to stop that right now. Mm-hmm. You have to put this on the priority list. If you do not, if the first thing, the first contact of your business, you're telling someone you don't care.
Yeah.
Does that sound like a good idea? Well, not calling them back ready because you're busy. Okay. That's you're telling them you don't care. I don't care how busy you think you are, because in the long run, you're not going to be busy.
Yep,
you're tossing work away, right?
Exactly. You're always, and I say this throughout my book, you're always on stage and people are always judging you. It doesn't seem fair, but people are always judging you, and they're trying to figure it out, because you know you're going to be, especially if you're in the home services, you're going to be coming around their family, and they need to know they can trust you. And just because you say trust me doesn't really mean a whole lot, but you need to prove it with your actions and your emotions and how you connect with your customer, right? In the early stages, you know, I talk about commonality and being on time and keeping your promises. Even the little promises, I think, are more important than the big ones, because they'll always call you on the big things that you didn't do, but it's those little things that'll eat at them. And if you let it go, you know, it just, they may not bring it up, but they're probably not going to refer you down the road. They're probably not going to recommend you to or call you back again to do business with. If you didn't keep all of the promises, and especially the little ones, I see those as being the kind of the top, the, you know, the finishing touch to everything that you do for them. And you know, I make to my customers a lot of promises, both verbally and in writing, and I keep every one of them. I mean, I make sure that I remember what it was. I'm constantly going over that, and it must be working, because like I said, my business is like yours is where you just have so much business you can't take on anymore.
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, because again, people, one thing I always tell people, I go, when's the best time to handle a problem? And it's immediately, right? That's the only time is immediately, right? It should be on the watch, just says immediately. Okay. When they call, and like you said, one other thing I learned too, Terry, was people, you know, they have an issue or some, say we mess something up, whatever it was, small, big, whatever. And you're thinking, oh man, this is going to be ugly. They're going to want, you know, an arm and a leg. You know, I'm going to lose my shirt on this. And all I learned was I just go, what can I do to make this right? Yeah. That's all. And they just go, well, if you could just pick the trash up over there and okay, knock it out. That's all they wanted. They don't really want some huge discount. This, they're not overly angry. All they wanted to be listened to.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And you take care of that little thing, and it's always way less than you ever thought it was going to be. And now they're happy.
Yeah.
And they forget about that an hour later. It never even existed. It's so cool.
Exactly. And if you ignore it for a while, it festers. You know, they look at that like they take it personally, even though maybe you don't mean it that way. It's how it goes for every job. But customers take stuff personally, even if you didn't, you can't see how it offended them. Maybe it doesn't matter to you if people show up late, but it probably does for them, because they're, as I said, they're always judging you. And it's better to err on the side of being a top professional, you know, being not just being on time, but being early, and not just cleaning up the yard. But I tell my guys when we pull in, I say, look around the house right now. This is how it needs to look when we leave at the end of the day. And so many customers tell me my yard's never looked so good. You actually did more than when you cleaned up your mess and my mess as well. But it makes an impression, and it's those impressions that build businesses over time.
Absolutely. So let me ask you, because what I did on mine, I have this, what I call the sales flow chart. Right? So I've got like 33 steps from the first call to long after the job's finished. Right. So do you have a process? Because when you talk about referral business, right, this is the big thing. So you really have to have a complete process, right? From that first call, that first inquire, all the way to after, to thank you gifts, to email follow-ups. What's your process like? Do you have something like that?
Yes, I do. And again, I'm after writing the book, I had a lot of people wanting to, you know, the book inspired them to change, but it really didn't tell them the things that they needed to do. So now I'm creating a workbook and an online course, which I'm really excited about. And I took 4 months off of my business in the off season here. I'm in Ohio and it's winter time, and I'm writing like a madman trying to put this thing together. But the process is made up of what I mentioned earlier, the before the sale phase, which is the connectability piece, the during the sale phase, which is the trustability piece, and the after the sale phase, which is what I call the wow ability phase. And in the beginning, you know, you're making an impression, you're letting them talk. In the middle part, you're doing the selling or basically just communicating your value. You're really selling sometimes is a dirty word. And I just changed it into you're taking away their reasons not to buy. And I have a six things that I can hand the customers. I don't even give them all six anymore because I have so much work. I don't need to. But they're things like proof of insurance before they even ask you if you're insured, and permission to nitpick is what I call the certificate. And really, it's a guarantee of satisfaction. And that speaks volumes. And then I go into what I call the after the sale phase, which is really wowing your customers. And I call it wowability. Those are three of the four abilities that I talk about in my book. But along with that is I have a testimonial form that's free to anybody who goes to my site and looks at my stuff. They can download that for free, but it does all the work for you. It in a quick paragraph, it asks the customer two simple questions that are meant to elicit a positive response. Although you want to know the bad things too, and they'll let you know those though usually, but it's two questions. And then at the bottom, they can sign it. They even check mark if you can use it in your marketing. And I just put those on my website, and I have so many testimonials. Nobody's going to read them all, but it speaks volumes as to, you know, what your customers think of you. And they could just scroll page after page and see all those testimonials. So it starts with how to act in the beginning to how to follow up at the very end, the whole process. So it is a thought out process of what's taken me years and years and years to figure out, because it's all been trial and error for me, as I'll bet it has for you as well.
Yeah, I do something very similar. And I think you're right on point, of course, but it's very important. And that after the sale stuff is where most people drop the ball. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, they might get some of the other elements and dialed in. That's okay. You know, they got it. They got the job. Mm-hmm. But as soon as they get that last check, all the people ever see is their taillights, and never again, never see them again. You know what I mean? So they need something, you know, they forget that. I call it lifetime profitable value, right? LPV, you know, that customer, whether you painted their house or you do other stuff, they're worth over the lifetime of their relationship. They're worth money to you. And maybe they spent 10 grand now, but yeah, over the next 25 years, they're going to spend 75, you know, yeah, depending on what you do. Right. So you need to understand that. So it's very important that you nurture that relationship afterwards. And I love that you've got the automated referral system, because those are the new word of mouth, right? Mm-hmm. People looking for reviews. They want to see reviews. They want to see testimonials. And let me ask you if you've seen this. This is what I learned. I like to start getting pictures if I could, right? Because what I recommend is, because when people are looking for a testimonial, they want to find themselves. The guy who's 60 wants to find a 60-year-old. The guy who's 24 wants a 24-year-old. You know what I mean? So yeah, they're, you know, if they're older, they're heavy, they're thin, they're tall, they're, you know what I mean? People start looking for themselves because yeah, there's a connectability there. Yeah. So when you're doing video and testimony you can get, whether it's video, whether it's written, whether it's you got a headshot in that, every kind matters. Mm-hmm. Right. And the more mix of that media, the better, because again, people like different things, right? Some people like the text, some people like the call, some people like the video, people like all kinds of different things. So the more you get, you're upping your chances of it being read. But again, they're looking to connect with someone who has a similar, not just experience, but is in the similar, similar age group, right? A demographic. That's the word I'm looking for. They're looking for that. Do you find that true too?
Oh my gosh, yes. The power is in those testimonials. I say, in the way I put it in my book, the most powerful marketing and selling tool you have is not even yours. You don't even own it. It's the borrowed words of your customers. And you're so right. You need to have not just written testimonials, but video ones too. And if you go to my painting website, I probably should update them. I think I have three or four of just, I'd be standing in the yard with a customer and they would hand me the check and just tell me how happy they were. And I would just stop there and say, do you mind if I record what you just said? Because if you say, would you say that, you know, would you give me a video testimonial right away? They'll go, oh, I don't know. I don't know what to say. And I look bad and this just isn't the right time. And I have no idea what I would ever say. Just as soon as they say it, say, just repeat what you just said and just get out your phone right there. And on my, like I said, on my homepage of my painting website, I have two or three or four video testimonials, and those speak volumes. A lot of people don't even go to my testimonial page once they see those, because as you said, people want to hear from other people who are just like them, who are, or they're considering, you know, using your service. They want to see what that experience was like for them. And there's so much, I hate to say this, but in the written one, sometimes, you know, people can be dishonest about that. I just writing in my course about how I know a painter in my area who will actually pay his employees and their friends $50 each for putting a great review on, what are some of them, Yelp and Porch and some of those. So that can be skewed a little bit maybe, but those video testimonials, they are powerful. And it's just something that they will do for you if you treated them right.
Yeah, great point. I mean, that's because I've seen that a lot with the false testimonials. You know, you get a lot of that stuff. Guys starting, they get kind of desperate. They want to have something out there. It's like, listen, you do the great. I have a friend who has a house washing business. Right, does soft wash and all that stuff, you know, and some other things, and he's amazing, right? He's got 550 testimonials, okay, legit. He'll take the video, he'll get everything he can. I mean, the guy does everything right. I love him. I mean, I love the guy because he hustles, but he never forgets that review. Every job that gets done, can I get in? And you look, and someone's got 550 testimonials. Jeez. I think you're going to hire the guy, okay? And it's in every form you can imagine. It's so, and everything's automated. He's done everything in packages, and you know, so they can just click and purchase it basically online. He's really automated his business as a one-man show, and he was doing huge numbers. And now he's finally, okay, I'm going to get some people on board and stuff like that. So I'm proud of him for that too. But again, the testimonial aspect, do not underestimate this. And I think you'll agree, it's just as you said, there's so much power in that third party validation.
Yeah. Anything right. You say or anything someone else says is 100 times more powerful than anything that you could say, because they have no motivation to say anything good about you like you would about yourself. Right. So the borrowed words of your customers, that's in this day and age, that's where it's at. And you got to have those, and you need to have a website and put those on there for people to just scroll through. The more you have, the better.
Yeah, I mean, literally, you could also, if you want to do a little old school too, and you meet them, you can give them a paper with, like, you know, there's 25 on one side, there's 25 on the other, right? You go, these are just some of my testimonials I want to give you. And they're like, oh, you know, so you got these both sides, like, holy cow, you know, so now they have something in their hands, and it's impressive, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's, when you got a crowd cheering for you, right, you're somebody. Yep. Right. That's kind of what that is. You know, if you want to think about it that way, it's like you're on stage and here's this whole stadium filled with people who want to be there and have paid to be there, and which they had. They literally have paid to be there because mm-hmm. they've hired you as their service. So let me ask you on the same route here, when we talk about nurturing the customer afterwards, right, to follow up our LPV, what else are you doing? You got the great testimonies, things like that. So just in general, like, how do you keep in touch with these over the next 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, whatever it is? You've been in long enough where you've probably got a good system now, right?
I have. And I haven't done that part as well as I should have. I mean, I still write out my bids by hand, and I'm not a big fan of emailing them, although most people just want it that way. Now in this day and age, nobody has time. And so I have created an email list based on, you know, maybe what I started in the last 3 or 4 years. Because even if I do email it, I still get on the phone and I want to talk through it with them and help them see that. So that's part of my process. But I do try to at least reach out to them once or twice a year, you know, at Christmas time, and just say, hey, Merry Christmas from Beg Painting, you know, a couple little things like that, just to kind of stay in top of mind a little bit. So I'm not as strong as that as I probably should be. But part of that is I just was never crazy about that, the digital presence at first. In my early years, I of course there was no computers when I started, but even when I started catching on, I begrudgingly worked myself in that way. But now it's to the point where I have a mailing list, an email list, it's easy to connect with them. And I do keep in touch once or twice a year with all my customers, and they remember me that way. So it does make a difference. The next time they're thinking of it, even if they're going to get bids though, you'll always be top of mind with them if you treated them right.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, because that's your goal, right? People are always going to have more needs. Mm-hmm. It's seldom one and done. Even if it's roofing, I tell people, I'll see you in 30 years. They make the joke and I leave. I'm like, don't say that. Okay, don't ever say that, you know, because you're going to have a hailstorm 5 years later. Now they need a new roof. Who are they going to call? The first guy who knocks on their door, you know, or you, because you've maintained a relationship with them and you're the local guy. You know, that's what you want. So you can't ever, that one and done is the worst attitude. I don't care what you sell. Yep. You know, you don't do that if you sell hamburgers. You shouldn't sell that if you're painting someone's house, fixing their car, whatever it is. It's all about a relationship. Like you said, you begin communicating from the get-go. When those lines are open and they feel, again, you're going into people's homes especially, right? You're going into someone's house. You got to think about that, right? And whatever prep they've done, just so you can walk inside their door, you need to keep that appreciation in your heart. Like, these people are welcoming in their house, right? So you got to go in with the right compliments. You got to, right? You got to talk to them. It's all about them. Like you said, you know, this is what lasts when it comes down to referrals and people thinking about you when the, either the next person needs something done or they need an additional service. Even if they call to ask, do you do X, right? Now, maybe you don't do it, but like your other guys who are referring you, the other pros, because they don't do aluminum, they don't do cedar, you can give someone a referral. And that is powerful. Exactly. Because that's a level of confidence. Like, no, but I have a great guy and you really should go. You really should talk to them. And so real quick on that, how have you been building those relationships with other contractors who have a different specialty than yours you don't want to do? So you guys can kind of do that back and forth.
Especially when I found out that those were the painters that were actually recommended me when it's aluminum, because a lot of times the homeowners would say, we called so-and-so first and they said, call you. And I file that away. I remember that. And then I refer them back, because we really don't do inside painting unless it's in the winter months and I have some time. And 80, 90% of the painters out there are interior painters. I didn't know that till I started writing my book. So I recommend four or five different ones, but I have 100% trust in them, because you got to be so careful who you refer, because you're right. They're going into their home, the customer's home. So it's no longer a business relationship. It's a personal relationship. And one more point on that, I was doing some research on things that the customers, what is the one thing the customer is looking for in a service industry business? And I assumed right away it was having their calls returned right away. But I found out I was close. That was the second thing. But the number one most important thing that consumers are looking for in the home services industry is to build a relationship with the contractor. They don't want to, just like you said, that one and done. They want to know there's somebody they can connect with. And I try to never tell the customer, if they ask me, some say, oh, do you do aluminum siding repairs or even any repairs outside? I said, I would if I could, but I just don't have time to do that. But here's somebody who does. So I try not to ever tell your customer no, even if it's does nothing to do with business coming your way. Always have an answer for them. You know, well, if I don't know anyone right now, but let me look at my card file. I'm sure I know someone, and I follow up with them and at least point them in the right direction if I can. Having that no mentality is just, I don't know. It's just, it doesn't work. You know, find ways to be of service to your customers, even if it doesn't create any more income for you, is still very, very powerful down the road.
It is, because you're a professional and you know people in the industry, right? Yep. Say, hey, I mean, you're in construction. You know any concrete guys? You know, well, yeah, I don't do concrete. But they come to ask you because you're the construction guy. You do something on their house. Plus, to that same point you just made, Terry, is, again, you're walking inside most people's largest personal investment they've ever made, which is their home. All right. So you have to have this mindset going in, like, this means a lot to them. They got 300 grand in this, 500 grand in this. They've got, you know, this is a big number, you know, and you're just going to trounce in there and just be all casual about it. Nobody, I mean, it doesn't mean you got to walk in eggshells, but you got to have that appreciation for it's their home and you want to give them the best that you can give them. Right. That's part of building the value. They're investing. Okay, they're investing in their home, whether it's painting the exterior or doing the kitchen counter, they're investing. You need to understand that, okay? There's a transaction going on there that means way more to them than it's going to mean to you. Yeah. You know, even though you're in business to make money, you know, what you're giving, what you're providing is a way bigger deal than you imagine, right?
Yep. It's not, you know, you hear that expression, oh, it's not personal, it's just business. And I think that's just nonsense, because every business, especially a home services business, is personal. And it doesn't get more personal than that. Like you said, it's you're offering a service that's important to the customer, because you're helping them with one of the biggest investments they'll ever make, their home. And that is so, you and I are writing. Yeah. You could have wrote my book.
Yeah. I love it. Well, you know, here's another thing I tell people just on that same line. you sit down at the kitchen table or wherever, and they bring you some cookies and you're having, you know, something to drink. They make you coffee. I'm like, you're eating with someone. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most intimate things you can do. Okay. You're like, they're like opening the fridge for you. Can I get you something? I just made these things. You know, my wife just made some biscuits. Here they are. They're hot out of the oven. You're here. Like, I mean, you don't get any tighter than that. You know what I mean? Who does that, right? So you're there now. Now you have to capitalize that in the sense that you have to take this in as a really, that's a compliment,
yeah,
right? That's a compliment. So, you know, you got to use that, right? I don't mean that use that in a bad way. What I mean is that you have to understand that completely, right? That this is part of that relationship. And this is where you lock the deal. Before you ever sell, before you get out of book, before you give them a price, you know, like you said, you're beginning to close the deal from the beginning from a relationship standpoint, right?
Yep, absolutely. I mean, almost, I'm rarely am I ever the lowest estimate. I'm usually the highest estimate or price, actually. But I still get the jobs because people aren't necessarily, price is not the most important thing to them. If you are operating your business as price being the deciding factor, then you're leaving the customer no choice but to take the lowest price because they can't differentiate between you and somebody else. If everybody seems the same, then you are competing on price. And that's, as you know, a race to the bottom. You don't
want to be there. Never be the cheapest guy. Yeah. My dad always told me growing up, you know, in the contracting business, he built golf courses and stuff and get a lot of bids for stuff. And he'd say, I usually take the middle guy because the high guy, man, might be too high. The low guy, definitely not going with him. Middle guy kind of knows his numbers. He's dialed in. That was kind of his little philosophy, you know, but I, of course, I'm on your end. I want to be the highest guy.
Yeah,
you know, because my product warrants it, my service warrants it, the value I bring to them, the relationships that we create, there's value to all of this. So I'm selling benefits, I'm selling value, right? Paint is paint, right? Paint. Everyone can go buy paint, all right? You can do it yourself, you know, but you're selling way more than just the service. So it's a very good point to kind of wrap this up with. What would be, give me your top maybe one to three kind of highlight takeaways for people in their service business, right? I know we've covered a lot here in this discussion, but if you had to pick the top three to begin with, what would they be? Just so we can kind of recap.
The top three. Probably the first one would be that being on time and paying attention to the customer, just, you know, get them started, but let them do the talking. They have control of the meeting in the beginning because you're trying to learn about them. So, and they're judging you. So first be on time and then keep your mouth quiet and your ears open is more important. It's why you have two ears, right? And one mouth.
So exactly.
You know, you need to connect right from the beginning. The next thing I would say in terms of importance would be, building that trust. And a great way that I build trust with my customers is what I call risk reversal, or giving your customer permission to nitpick. Because I explain it, you know, as service professionals, we all guarantee our work, but most don't use it as a selling point because my feeling is you feel like you're going to get nitpicked to death if you tell people, oh, I won't turn a bill in until you're happy. But what I've discovered is people pay me quicker because we're so focused on knowing my guys know that I can't pay them if I don't get paid, and we don't want to go back on touch-ups. So having that satisfaction guarantee policy and making sure your customer understands that puts you ahead of everyone else who doesn't really make that top of mind because they really don't want to, although they'll guarantee the work, they really don't want the customer nitpicking. But I call it giving them permission to nitpick. So having that risk reversal policy, I think, is really powerful. And the last thing is, if you're not collecting testimonials, start doing it, because the customers don't know that repeat business is the good business and that they should be looking for work for you. If you don't straight out say, I'm always looking for more business, to let them know that referrals are important to you. And that's the reason why you can keep your prices down, because you don't have to spend as much money on advertising. So let the customer, you know, make it all about them in the beginning. Be sure to speak up and let them know that you want to know if they're not happy about something. And then the last thing is use those other people's words, because there's no more powerful way to communicate that you're the best by having other people say that you're the best.
Awesome. Yeah, those are great. Those are great 3 points. I mean, very right on point with those. And it's whether it's day one for you in your business, where you've been in 5 years and you're trying to correct things because things aren't going the way you should. I mean, this hour that we spend here should give you some hope. Okay, I always like to give people hope. Like, you think it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to be trapped in the owner prison. You don't have to be the low bid guy. You don't have to just get by the next week. Okay, we want to elevate business owners, right? Just like you're doing with your course. I'm excited for your course too, Terry. I think that's awesome you're going to do that, because that's what people need. They need the how-tos.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
We've talked a number of how-tos in this discussion, but you can't do the deep dive here in 1 hour. Right. So I'm so glad you're creating this course, and it's going to be super valuable. When someone can take your 40 years, do an online course, they literally, like what I do, I'll time compress 10 years into into a course. It's amazing. You know, so you always want to follow those that have been there, right? The path's going to be much easier. So let's listen to guys like you. Let's take that experience. Let's you got the proof. You built the business. You're still doing it. I love all that, man. This has been a blast. You know, this has been really, really fun discussing all this stuff with you, Terry. So one of the things, so let's do this. I always want to give people a chance to follow you, get in touch with you, whatever you got going on. Of course, get your book, everything else, and read this stuff. So why don't you give that information now? I'll also put it all in the show notes. So everyone got to then click on the links and stuff there too. So go ahead with that.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Richard. Okay. The best way to find my book is just to go to Amazon, and you can type in my name, which most people can't spell my last name, but as you said, it'll be in the notes. Yeah. Terry Begg, you can type into the search box, or Attract and Keep Customers for Life. The Kindle version is just, I believe, $3.99. So it's not a real big investment, but there's a lot of value in the book. The best way to find my course, I have a YouTube channel and a lot of blogs, is to go to my speaker author website, and that's just my name, terrybegg.com. So if you could go to that, there you'll find everything else. The course is still in the works. It'll be done in a few months from now, and there'll be a lot of information there where you can get online and find that if you want to take it to the next level. Because the thing I talk about a lot in that is I'm sharing, and there's no theory in anything that I talk about or in the course. It's all things that I learned, some of them the hard way, some of them just from trying to do every different way imaginable. But it'll as you said, it'll take years and years off the learning curve for you to start out running right from the get-go and not go through those 8 tough years like I did.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that's what we all want, right? So again, if you're new business, you should be focused on ways to compress time. It's going to save you money. It's going to save time. It's going to save you a little bit of depression because of the amount of mistakes you make. You're going to think you don't know what you're doing, even though you're a hard worker and you're getting after stuff. So just understand that no matter what, it's a bumpy road. So anyone can smooth that road out a little bit, you better take that. Don't be like I was. I was too thick-headed to take any help, you know, so I don't do that anymore. I love help. Bring it on. Okay, absolutely. Give me another coach. Let's go to the next level. That's all good. So, Terry, thanks so much for your time, man. I'm so glad you cut some time off for me to share with my audience. I love what you're doing with your business, man. It's 40 plus years of making things happen. That's commendable in and of itself, right? A lot of people don't make that time frame in the same industry, man. So I'm super impressed with you. And man, you really got your stuff dialed in. I just wish you the most continued success helping people, getting the word out there, and keep being great, man. I appreciate it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Richard. Like I said, I do a fair amount of podcasts, and it's just so nice to talk to someone who's on the exact same page as I am. So I really enjoyed myself. And please, anybody out there listening, please feel free to connect with me. I'd love to hear your story as well. So it was great being here. And I can't believe the time went by as quickly as it did, but I guess that proves that we're kindred spirits in a way, I guess, right?
There you go, man. It flies. It always goes fast. I love it. Well, thank you again. I really appreciate it.
Sure thing. All right. Thanks so much again. Take care.
Thank you for listening to the ETOP podcast. Don't forget to subscribe. And if you liked what you've heard, please leave a great review for us. Your subscription and review helps us reach more people so we can show them how to escape the owner prison. Also, check out the links in the show notes about today's guests and more ways to connect with ETOP on social media. Stay strong and keep moving forward with your business.